Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Monty Walden. How are you, Monty?
Pretty good, thanks, Chris.
Excellent. You made your name on TV, probably in a few books and all that sort of stuff, but really as a biodynamic winemaker and biodynamic journalist and expert, really, isn't it? That's your shtick, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I see it really as a tool to make better quality wine. And some people may find that a little bit nuts. But, you know, I got into biodynamics because I saw the results and the results were good. And so I thought, OK, that's the horse to back.
I think there's two ways to look at biodynamics. There's the wine delivers a nice wine. And then there's another way where you get involved in the religious side and the astrology side and all this sort of stuff. Where do you sit on that sort of plane?
Well, I think if people want to take it to the sort of more spiritual level, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, ultimately, from a wine perspective, you're trying to make a wine that reflects where it's from and that tastes good and offers good value for money. And I think biodynamics provides the criteria to create all those three things. And, you know, as I said, I always say that one of the key precepts of biodynamics is self-sufficiency. So we have this terroir obsession in the wine industry. Surely, if you're trying to be as self-sufficient as you can, not buying stuff in all the time, that you're trying to live off your own farm and produce a high-quality product, you're automatically going to have the chance to make properly terroir-driven wine. So what's wrong with that?
No, I hear you. But you can also go down the sustainable viticulture and maybe you won't be doing some of the mythology or
yeah,
the magic.
But I mean, it's a bit like being half pregnant, isn't it? Sustainable viticulture. I mean, in sustainable viticulture, by law, you still can use weed killer and pesticide and all the rest of it. You just use a little bit less, and
you don't have to use it.
You don't have to, but most do. And the thing with organic and biodynamic is you really have to throw. When I worked for Bobby Fetzer, what he said to me is, when you go organic or biodynamic, you have to throw away the key to the chemical garage. That is the key thing. With sustainable, you don't have to, and that is a key difference. I think is you sort of do make a commitment. I think mainly you make a commitment to yourself. Obviously, you're getting checked by third-party certifiers, but you are making a commitment to yourself, but also to your land. And you're saying, look, I am going to work this out. I'm going to understand my land. I'm going to work out why I'm getting pests. I'm going to work out why I'm getting diseases. And I'm going to try and combat them using my brain and using nature, working with nature rather than against it. Again, what's not to like?
But you can be, not necessarily biodynamic, I haven't heard this, but I've heard of organic producers use helicopters to deliver sprays and they're not sustainable. So organics doesn't necessarily make you sustainable. It just means that you're following a set of rules, but you don't necessarily have to be sustainable because organics isn't a subset of sustainability. Sustainability is a different beast. They have an intersection, perhaps.
Yeah, okay. The point about helicopters, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think any, I mean, some biodynamic producers do that because they want to spray particular sprays when the moon is in a particular place, for example, and because they're in Champagne, they have a fair amount of money, and they may have three rows in one village, two rows in another. So to do that sort of by hand, if you like, is quite difficult. But I would say, listen, you know, getting a helicopter is really not the answer. You should find a way of getting people, hiring stagiaires, whatever, to do that work for you. That is a slightly different debate. That's sort of environmental sustainability, but in wine sense, sustainable as defined as you are allowed to go into the chemical garage. But I take your point about the helicopters. I mean, what is interesting about the flip side of the biodynamic coin is you've got more producers now working with animals, ploughing with animals, not just getting rid of the sprays, but getting rid of the tractors and the machinery. And that's good for two things. It's good for the soil, because it means there's less compaction. You're also with the animal, you're creating manure, so you can have a fertility source that you can regenerate your terroir with. And it's also good for man because we are getting fatter and unhealthier as a generation. And so the more physical labour you do, the better it is for you, for your vineyard, for your local community, because you're burning less gas.
I hadn't really thought about it from a fitness point of view.
Well, you know, in Europe at the moment, you've got like 30% of young people in Spain and France haven't got a job. Get these people farming.
Yeah.
Why pay them to sit at home and do nothing? If they don't get into the habit of working and exercising, then you're going to have a health time bomb on your hands.
Well, let's get on to the biodynamics. I just want to tease out the religious side first, and then we'll talk about soils and that, because it is quite an important element to me, because you do get people who do treat it as a religion. But do you need to engage at that level to be properly biodynamic? You know, do you have to really accept that as a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea really is that you accept that that there is a sort of spiritual side to it. Now, you can read that two ways. Either you think you were going to sort of go to church, or you buy into the philosophy. And the reason biodynamics came about was after the First World War, when we faced crisis of health, a massive flu epidemic. We'd also lost a lot of the generation that actually did the farming, the yeomen. They were all dead. The aristocrats were still alive, and they didn't really know how to farm. And it was a sort of a choice. It's either we go down the chemical route, which is ultimately what we have done, or we try and regenerate our farms. And this guy, Rudolf Steiner, came out with biodynamics in 1924. And he basically said, listen, if we farm in a dumb way, we're going to create dumb food, and we're going to just get dumber and dumber and dumber. However, what we need to do is to improve our spirit, to really accept that we do have a spiritual side as human beings. As we are what we eat, the only way we can do that is to grow food that is filled with this sort of vitality. And the way we can do that is to farm in a better way. And he created these what are called 9 biodynamic preparations. 3 of them are sprays, 6 of them go in your compost pile. By putting those preparations on the land, that will go into the land, the crops that we eat will be imbued with this these what are called etheric formative forces, this kind of added element, if you like, and we will start to be better human beings, both bodily and spiritually. And that's the idea. It's not really like a church, but as your question was, do you have to buy into it? Really and truly, you do have to buy into it to be a true biodynamic farmer, if you like. And what did he do? 1924, when people say that that's kind of nuts, he actually predicted that our bee populations would be dying off around about now in 80 years' time. So he did that in 1924. Okay, we're like 10 years ahead of that. We've now got a crisis in bees, and we read stories in the newspaper about bees. If we don't have any bees, these are the things that are so crucial to pollinating our crops. So you can say he was completely bonkers, or you can say actually probably one or two things he said were not too far wrong.
Do you find that people can be both, say, a Christian or a Muslim and biodynamic, or is there a conflict there?
I don't think so, no. I mean, you have a lot of Indian farmers, okay, not lots, but, you know, Indian farmers have seen the value of making horn manure, which is burying the manure in a cow horn and digging it up 6 months later. Obviously, for them, cows are kind of almost like religious beings, and they can see the results. And it's not a religion in the sense that there is a particular church that you can or cannot go to, you know, whether you're Jewish, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Christian, whatever. It's more a way of thinking about the world in a more spiritual way. And I think if you take a step back from the polemics, it is quite nice to be sort of connected with the natural world, I think. And I think if we were more connected to the natural world and didn't spend so much time on our bloody iPhones, we would have a very different view to what is really going wrong with our farming at the moment.
Well, let's talk about some of the preparations, because I actually think there's some good stuff there in the preparations. I'm not really going to go down the astrology route, but...
Astronomy.
Astronomy.
Yeah, astrology is Mystic Meg in the Daily Mail.
No, I'm pretty much, using astrology direct. That's okay. The word I'm using.
All right, okay.
I think it's partly because, a lot of it, there's a lot of homeopathy in some of the preparations, from what I could tell.
Yeah, it's you're achieving results with small doses.
Yeah, which is like, you know, homeopathy a wee bit.
Well, yeah, I get that. But I mean, if you look at horn manure, for example, what you're doing there
let's use horn manure.
All right.
But I think some of them are homeopathic and some of them aren't necessarily homeopathic.
Yeah.
And I don't know which ones are which, but there are definitely some. But let's start with horn manure, because that's the one that a lot of people laugh at, but there might be some good stuff there.
Well, I mean, horn manure basically is you bury some manure from a female cow in a cow horn, from a female cow that's had babies, and you put it in the soil over winter, say between autumn and spring, leave it there for 6 months, dig it up in the spring. And the idea is that the manure, by being in the horn during that period of the time when the earth is alive, will transform itself into kind of like the earth within the earth. If you think about it, the manure was made from grass, mm-hmm. which was made by the soil, and we know that cows can... Basically, they can live off one field but fertilize two. So we know their manure is very powerful. And Steiner thought, well, hang on, why is their manure so powerful? And he said, what happens is when they digest, they release all these forces, these formative forces, if you like, into their manure. And these forces stay in the cow. They don't get lost because she's got these horns on her head and hooves. And so they sort of rebound, if you like. And so he thought, right, if I put this manure in the horn, that horn is like an energy captor. If I put the horn in the soil over winter, when the earth is alive, what we dig up is full of microorganisms. And there's one guy who's a farmer in the UK, Jody Schechter, South African racing driver. He's got a 450-hectare farm called Laverstock, and he's got, you know, buffalo and sheep and pigs and all the rest of it on his farm. And he's kind of a scientific guy, and he is not the kind of guy that's going to buy into spiritual baloney. And he analysed the horn manure after 2 months, 3 months, 6 months in the soil, and then 8 months, 10 months. And the peak in the level of microorganisms in his horn manure was at 6 months, exactly as Steiner kind of said it would be. So in a way, you're talking about homeopathy. You maybe, for one horn, you could fertilise a hectare of soil, which is maybe 60 grams of manure on 1 hectare. So there is that sort of homeopathic element. But if you then get away from that, and actually let's just analyse the numbers. If you aerate that manure in water, which is what you're supposed to do for an hour, you're going to multiply those microorganisms. It's almost like adding a yeast to your soil. Mm. And what that does is it makes your soil spongier. It means that your vine roots can go down deeper. They can start accessing nutrients that they otherwise would not get. When it rains, the rain stays in your vineyard. It doesn't cause you runoff or erosion, which means that your house insurance premium goes on because you're suffering from flooding. So that it's kind of like a win-win. And you can do that yourself. There's no safety certificate. There's no mask that you have to wear. It's not dangerous. Kids can do it. Kids even do it. What is not to like?
I think for me, I look at that and I say there's two elements to this. There's a homeopathic process and there's getting microorganisms into your soil. Have people done studies where they've put it in a ceramic thing, done it and then used it, and do they find the same level of organisms?
No, they don't. I mean, they've been studied putting it in glass, putting it in a bull's horn, putting it in like a leather sheath, ceramic pots. Doesn't have the same effect. Now, on the scientists say, well, maybe there's a chemical reaction between the horn and the manure. That's possible. If you just look at horn manure as well, it just literally smells like the earth within the earth. And the idea, you're not just putting the microorganisms in there. That's a kind of mechanistic way, if you like. You're actually putting this spiritual vitality into your soil so that every plant on your vineyard, whether it's a cover crop or a tree or a vine, is starting to reconnect with that soil and becoming almost more intelligent. Because if you put fertilizers and weed killers on, you're basically killing a whole substrate of microorganisms. Yep. But you're just treating your plants in a kind of a dumb way, if you like. That's the way of thinking about it. Now, obviously, not everybody will agree. People love their pesticides, they love their weed killers. That's absolutely fine. All I'm doing is trying to explain what the biodynamic theory behind it is. And it's all about creating food that's got that vitality, that inner vitality that's good for body and soul.
The spirituality bit is a bit I struggle with, because I can see soils high in nutrients and high in bugs, basically, as quite a good thing. You know, there's been a lot of research that the interaction in roots to soil is there's a lot of microorganisms in there that are actually helping pass nutrients through and all that sort of stuff. So I can see why you want soils to be alive, and I can see that if you keep poisoning your soils with pesticides, you're going to kill stuff in your soil eventually, which means that the plant could potentially suffer in ways that you hadn't initially anticipated. So I can see all that. That all makes quite sensible stuff to me. It's just that spiritual side I get a bit woolly on.
Yeah, but you don't. I mean, there are plenty of biodynamic farmers that don't really sort of buy the spiritual side, and or they don't appear to anyway. But they do. Listen, we get good results now. Yeah. A true biodynamic guy would say actually you get even better results if your intention, your thought process was much more open to the kind of the voodoo side of it, if you like. But I would say, listen, you know, a vineyard that is a hectare of vineyards that's getting horn manure sprayed on it rather than chemical fertilizers and pesticide has got to be a good thing for everybody. Okay, now whether the guy buys or the farmer woman buys into the spiritual bit or not, I'm not that bothered about it. It just means that's one field that is actually starting to be a net benefit to the planet, because it's going to absorb carbon as well. And we know there's too much carbon, and also absorb more water.
Yeah, the water's, well, the more humus that you've got, it's a sponge, as you say. So, you know, that's...
You know, if you just drive around, you don't have to... Anywhere you go now, you drive around, look at the soils, and what you see after rain, for example, soils that have just been ploughed, you'll kind of see these lumpy soils that have a sort of bleached texture to them. And what's happening there is the soils are actually going back to rock. Initially, what happened is rocks kind of create soil over, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of years. And we're very quickly kind of turning these fields back into rock, because the soil is either getting washed away or just getting depleted, because there is not that microbial life to hold it together. So again, forget the voodoo side of it. Just if you just want to put a yeast on your soil, buy the packet of biodynamic yeast, because it's going to be cheaper and it's going to be a better result than anything else. You don't have to get into the voodoo.
What's your favourite preparations? Not from a spiritual side, but from a this is what it delivers in the vineyard.
Well, I mean, it's easy to say that one, but I mean, all the preparation, I would just say all of them. I'm sorry, that's a cop-out. But
it is a cop-out,
well,
mate.
Because you can't just use, I mean, the thing is, you can't just use one. I mean, if you're going to stimulate the dark bit of your vineyard, which is the soil, you've got to stimulate the atmosphere above it, so you do the horn silica. There's a tea called made from a plant called Equisetum, which is kind of sandy, like a sandy tea
almost. Let's talk about some of the preparations then, and how they you think they interact with the wines and the vineyard, if that's all right.
Yeah, well, basically, what you're doing is, if you think about terroir, a good wine has two things. It has a flavour of the place it comes from, so the soil, and it's ripe. Yeah, so the soil part is the horn manure, or the 500 as they call it, and that's all about connecting your vine to the earthy, dark, tangible part. The ripeness part of the grape has to come from the sun, which is almost like it's intangible, heat and light. So there you have what's called horn silica. So you basically bury quartz or sand in a horn for 6 months between spring and autumn when the sun is sort of rising every day, it's getting sunnier. So by spraying that over your vines early in the morning, it allows your vines to sort of stretch up almost to the light. And that's good for the ripeness of your grapes. It allows wine to keep longer. And the horn manure, which goes on the soil, allows you to get that terroir expression. This wine can only come from this piece of ground. That's the key thing. And then the other six preparations that go in the compost pile are yarrow, chamomile, stinging nettle, oak bark, dandelion, and they basically go into your compost pile. And like the horn manure, they're all prepared, or not all of them, but they're mainly prepared in animal organs. And the key thing that Steiner said was, you've got to try and get everything within the realm of what he called the living. And by using these animal organs as sheaths, they're not actually ingredients. You just put your plant material in the sheath, you bury it or hang it in a tree, expose it to the sun or expose it to the earthly forces in the soil. By doing that, you're sort of re-energizing nature. And he selected various plants to go with various animal organs to basically make... The idea is that your whole vineyard or your whole farm is really going to be sensitive, not just to what's going on underground, but also to what's going on above our heads in terms of celestial cycles. So you kind of start seeing your farm as a really complete, self-contained living organism. Your plants are more aware. Again, that sounds a bit bonkers, but... You know, if you're thirsty, you can walk over to the sink and you can pour yourself a glass of water. If you're a plant and you're thirsty, you cannot move. You're absolutely connected to these celestial cycles above your head, whether it's the moon, the sun, the stars, or the planets. You're intimately connected to that. And to think that plants aren't connected to that or shouldn't be connected to that, for me, is a folly. And using these biodynamic preparations is a way of reconnecting those plants to those celestial cycles so that you have what's called a complete plant.
I don't think there's a problem with plants and animals going through some sort of celestial cycle. Women in their menstrual cycle all line up with the moon and things like that. Some plants will pollinate themselves on a particular hour, almost on a particular day. So they need to be able to understand where they are in nature to be able to do that accurately, or else they're not going to pollinate at the right time. So there's definitely some sort of interaction going on there. I don't think there's a problem there. It's just...
Well, I agree with you, but if you're using chemical fertilizers, for example, it's quite... You can see a shift in when your vines are producing their... are flowering, for example, when they're becoming fertile, they're producing their seeds. When the seeds are ripening, you see a really big shift. And what happens with chemical fertilizers, you just kind of speed everything up. You artificialize those natural cycles. You force them almost... And what happens is you tend to get wines that can have a little bit too much sugar, but not enough flavour almost, because you've given them too much of a boost. And what you see from the guy I work with at FETSA, Dave Coble, he's a PhD plant physiology from Cornell. You know, he's checked his pruning weights in his vineyards, and what he finds is the vines are a little bit smaller by using biodynamics, and he just says that they're a little bit less fat. And because they're smaller, they're more efficient. Because they're more efficient, they're much better ripeners. And they're putting all their energy into ripening their seeds. That's ultimately what they're doing. They're not doing it to make wine. And through that, you're going to get more complexity in your wine. And wines are at a better balance. If they're better balanced, they're going to be better to age. If they age better, they're going to be a better investment. If you think about why the top grossers in Bordeaux, more increasingly going biodynamic, they're not doing it for fashion. They sell their wines for thousands of pounds a bottle. They're doing it because they've seen their neighbours do it, and it works.
You mentioned an interesting point about the pruning weights. Generally, I sort of agree with what you said, that generally most people say that the more the plant puts its energy into vegetative growth, the lower the quality of the grapes. And by having lower weight pruning weights, it's obviously putting less energy into the vegetative growth. Strangely enough, people normally say that you'll get vegetative growth if you've got lots of fertilizer on the soils. But you're putting fertilizers on the soils and you're going for lower vegetative growth? Or am I...
Yeah, but the horn manure isn't a fertilizer. It brings fertilizing force. It's not actually a fertilizer. It'd be pretty hard with a sort of almost like a thimble full of horn manure, which is basically earth, to cause massive vigor problems. You're going to get that with fertilizers because basically what happens there is the plant isn't in contact with the soil anymore. It's a soluble fertilizer. So the plant sucks up very quickly everything it needs for a whole season in one day. So you're going to get this tremendous boost in spring because you've then over-fertilized the plant. You then get issues with vigor and too much shading and rot. And the guy that sold you the fertilizer, you also get more weeds. The guy that sold you the fertilizer, oh, too many weeds there, son. Let's get some weed killer in there. And let's get some pesticides and some fungicides because your vines are out of balance, you see. So, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, you can't be half biodynamic. If you either you get rid of all the chemicals or you use all the chemicals. Okay. The bottom line is there are more growers globally now that are not using weed killers, are not using systemic pesticides because they're certified organic and biodynamic. It's now about 10% of the global vineyard. Now, these guys, either they're doing it all for marketing or they're doing it because it seems to work.
What about the compost? You talked about, you know, getting preparations and adding them to compost. Where does the underlying material for the compost come from? Is it coming from the vineyard itself? Is it the cane waste?
Yeah, you're right. Ideally, it should come from what you need to do is, you in biodynamics, you're basically transforming waste streams into fertility streams. And ideally to compost, I mean, you can compost your grape skins and pips and prunings and all the rest of it, but you really need to put a little bit more back than that, just because the place that you're coming from is normally a pretty nasty place in terms of residues in your soil. And the idea in biodynamics is you really should start getting some animals, especially cows, because they're immensely powerful as a sort of a fertilizing force. Basically, you compost all of your waste from your winery, including like cardboard boxes and stuff like that. You put your biodynamic preparations in, and what you put back onto the soil is well fermented, properly fermented compost, which smells earthy. It almost smells like leaf mold. It's full of beneficial bacteria and fungi. You put that back on the soil together with those preparations that have helped that decomposition of your compost pile occur in the right way, so you get these beneficial formative forces onto your vineyard as well as a bit of organic matter.
If you put too much animal waste on, they have normally really high nitrogen though, aren't they?
Yeah, well that's why you want to have your own animals, but you know, I do stress you must ferment the manure properly. If you put raw manure, whatever type it is, on your on any kind of farm or garden, you're going to be putting a lot of nitrogen on your soil, and you're going to be taking out the thing that you most want in your soil, which is the carbon. So that's why you ferment stuff first. That's why you compost stuff first. And it will take you between 6 months and a year to compost everything down properly.
My nana was, she was partly crazy, to be honest. But she did have the biggest, most ugly tub of bird poo that used to sit in the back of the end of the garden. She just sprayed it on her garden. She loved it. She thought it was brilliant. I personally couldn't stand the smell of it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Not generally, really. I think bird poo is normally fairly rich in potassium. That's the worst thing you want to put directly on your soil because you just get so much vigor. I mean, I went to one vineyard in Uruguay that was organic, and I tasted the wines. These red wines, they were like light rosé. They had no colour at all. I said, well, can we go and see the vineyard? The guy said, yeah, let's go and see the vineyard. I looked at the vineyard, it was really, really vigorous. I said, do you put any compost? Yeah, we have our own chickens. I thought, ding, 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 alarm bells went off. Just putting raw chicken manure, it was like putting a nuclear bomb on your vineyard. And it was like, you know, that's bad organics in action. That's unscientific bad organics, because you're making, you've destroyed your soil, you're destroying your vines, you're making terrible wine that's impossible to ferment properly. You're adding a load of additives to it. It's headache material, disaster. Okay, and the thing with biodynamics is you really should be thinking everything through properly, cause and effect. And the people that do it right, just walk in their vineyards. I mean, that's the key thing. The proof is in the pudding. Walk in their vineyard, stick your hand in the soil, look at the vine. Another thing with biodynamics is the horn silica, for example, getting the plants to express themselves upwards. You'll generally see that in a biodynamic vineyard, the shoots are really firm. They're really erect. You go to the neighbouring vineyard, they'll be taller, higher, they'll be flopping over the top supporting wire. So you can really clearly see that. And you can go to Alsace. Why, when the first guy in Alsace that went biodynamic, he was the lone ranger. His neighbours ostracised him. He's, you're going to bring disease in here, all this organic bullshit. Or he started doing it. Within a few years, actually, how are you growing your grapes? Because your grapes are ripe and ours aren't. And that's happened in Champagne and the Rhone. All these areas where you've got these Napoleonic inheritance laws, where you've got these vineyards, have all been divided by into family units. And people lean over the fence and say, actually, how are you doing that? And so that's why it's just like, that's why it's spreading or has spread so quickly in places like Alsace, which I think about 15% of the Alsace vineyard is now organic, and most of that is biodynamic.
There's two things that you mentioned. One was about potassium, and you said that it's headache material. Is potassium give you headaches? Because I have a lot of people say, oh, certain red wines give me headaches. Is it potassium that's doing that?
No, what I'm saying is because the vines were so out of balance, as was the wine, that you needed a lot of sulfur dioxide to keep that stable in terms of the pH.
Okay.
To keep the wine, quotes, stable. And that's where your kind of headache wines come from. I'm not saying that sulfur, there's a debate about histamines and all the rest of it, but okay, wines that are overly sulfured, basically, because the grapes are not good quality. If they're rotten, you've got to put something in there. You can't, you know, and to sterilize those rotten grapes, you're going to sling some sulfur in there.
Excellent. All right, Monty, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Nice one, Chris. Thanks very much.